Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Really got a try on that left-hand side. What happened?
Oh, but I'm going up and over and he head over biscuit. It wasn't enough stability there for myself, but no, I was busting for a bit of meat this game. It didn't seem to work out.
Hello, cheers, and welcome to the Scrum of the Earth podcast, the weekly show for news, reviews, great interviews, and so much more, all about the world of rugby. My name is David Lawrence. I'm an American rugby fan who follows the game wherever I can find it, all over the globe. If you'd like to get in touch, well, I'm easy to find on all your socials, and you can always just drop an email to thescrumoftheearth@gmail.com. Well, this marks the first weekly episode created through the Sports Social Network, our new podcast home. So I just want to run through the basics for any new folks who have just discovered the show. So we've been doing weekly episodes like this for close to 3 years now. Those episodes are almost always a half hour to just make them, you know, as digestible as possible. However, we also do interviews and bonus episodes frequently that are often quite a bit longer. So while this is our 149th weekly edition, there are also 105 bonus episodes, including most recently a diverse array of interviews with the likes of Harry Jones and Alice Soper. Each week, we use the same format. We do this little intro right here, followed by current updates, which is essentially just a recap of what's happening here in my life outside of Boston, Massachusetts. Because I'm doing this much longer introduction this time, we're actually going to skip current updates this week, but it will be back next time. So after that, we do news, which we keep to just a single story. Same goes for thoughts of the week, which is exactly what it sounds like. And that sets us up for our reviews, which covers all the action from the weekend over a wide range of different competitions. So I'm a founding member of the New England Free Jacks here at home. I support the Highlanders in Super Rugby, Connacht in the URC, Harlequins in the Premiership, and Bordeaux Begle in the Top 14. Other competitions you can expect us to cover include the NPC and the FPC in New Zealand, along with Super Rugby Opiki, which just ended, of course. And we occasionally touch on the HSBC Sevens and, of course, any international action we can find anywhere. So finally, for the show, we give out the Diamond in the Ruck Award, which is basically like a player of the week across all the competitions. And then we finish off with previews for next week's action. We're always looking to grow and improve the show. So any thoughts, questions, or feedback you might have, absolutely, please send it along. And of course, you can like and subscribe and all the other usual things. That would be great to help us grow the show here. Don't worry, the intro is never this long. This is just a one-off. So there was definitely a fair amount of rugby this weekend. So why don't we get this show on the road?
It's too good. People have to know.
Yes, Isa, I'd say it probably is good news this week, especially if you're a supporter of South Africa. So quoting here from Planet Rugby, quote, after winning the 2023 Rugby World Cup, South Africa rugby is nominated in 9 different award categories and 3 players have been shortlisted for honors. The nominations were announced on Wednesday evening, with South Africa rugby featuring in 9 of the 22 categories. The winners will be announced at the awards ceremony on Sunday, the 5th of May. South Africa rugby will compete with Cricket South Africa and Cycling South Africa for the Sports Federation of the Year Award, while President Mark Alexander has been nominated for the Administrator of the Year category. Jacques Nienaber, he's up for the Coach of the Year Award, while 2023 South Africa Rugby Men's Player of the Year, Eben Etzebeth, features in the Sportsman of the Year and People's Choice Award categories, the latter of which Captain Siya Kolisi has also been nominated for. Kolisi, of course, has been recognized for his invaluable contribution to the Springbok team by being named as a nominee for Sports Star of the Year, unquote. So the article has a lot more than that. That was just a brief little wink at it. It clearly goes on from there. Definitely worth a read if you have any interest. And of course, the link will always be in the show notes at the bottom. Just check it out. So moving on to our thoughts of the week, and my thoughts this week are in the increasing frequency of red cards in Super Rugby Pacific. So last week, I actually joked about this very thing right here, how it was almost like the newest theme for a weekend in Super Rugby, and apparently I wasn't the only one who noticed. So quoting here again, quote, across the top 14, URC, Premiership, and Super Rugby Pacific, the Southern Hemisphere tournament boasts the worst disciplinary record this season. So the article basically then goes on to detail all the specifics of all the red cards in the other 3 competitions that they were looking at. I'm just going to do the basic numbers. I also want to say, I don't think every one of their numbers are accurate. They just don't make sense to me. If you are interested, the link is in the show notes, as always. Check it out. Let me know what you think. I would love to hear from you. Either way, jumping back in, it does list the top 14, 9 red cards in 188 matches. The Premiership, 2 red cards in 93 matches. The URC, 10 red cards in 151 matches. And Super Rugby Pacific, 99 red cards in 66 matches. So far this season, a red card is issued on average every 7th game. Chiefs prop Jared Proffitt, Hurricanes back Jordy Barrett, Reds flanker Fraser McWright, Highlanders forward Taniello Talea, and Moana Pasifika, I can get it out eventually, winger Nigel Awong were all given their marching orders for dangerous tackles. Prophet, Barrett, Talea, and McWright all got 3-game bans, while Awong surprisingly had his red card rescinded. Meanwhile, the Fijian Drua, they saw 2 reds in 1 game against the Melbourne Rebels. Frank Lamani was given a 6-week ban after his cheap shot on Josh Canham resulted in a red card. And later in that game, their hooker was red carded for a headbutt on a Reds front rower, with his actions resulting in a 2-game ban. I'm still pretty annoyed about that. It's nuts. Anyway, the Drua's Tavita, I'm going to butcher it, Canavere was also sent off for a dangerous clear out, but the foul play review committee rescinded his red card. There was also a red card for Reds scrum half Tate McDermott for a cheap shot, and he copped a 3-week ban for his actions, unquote. Well, as I said, it's getting a little nutty down there. Frank Lamani and Tate McDermott in particular, like, that wasn't just dumb. It could severely impact their team's chances going forward in this competition. Neither club has a backup at that position anywhere near their ability level, and with things coming to a head, this could have massive implications on the season as a whole. We'll have to see. Okay, that brings us to our reviews, and we are starting again this week with the Women's Six Nations. On Saturday, it was England at home for Ireland, Italy hosting Scotland, and Wales taking on France to close out this year's penultimate round. So England versus Ireland started the action. I'd heard during the week that England had planned to, I can't remember the exact phrase, it was something along the lines of take the shackles off, and holy cow, that is exactly what they did. They had been consistently dominant through the first 3 rounds, scoring 48, 46, then 46 again. But this week, they got close to that at halftime. And by the end, it was an epic beatdown, smashing the Irish 88-10. Looking at the stats, almost beggars belief, with the Red Roses racking up a staggering 1,065 meters gained. Compare that with Ireland's 198. England, they poured in 14 tries, 3 of which came in the final 10 minutes alone. We had that rare occurrence, too, of 2 players each getting a hat trick. It was the usual suspects, Abby Dow and Ellie Kildon, who has been a force of nature this tournament. England had secured their bonus point by the 19th minute and were ruthless in their execution right through the full 80. I've seen the Irish defense described as Swiss cheese as they missed 35 tackles in the first half alone. Ireland were awarded a penalty try but never actually managed to cross the line, their only other points coming off the boot of Dana O'Brien midway through the first half. It was England's 8th consecutive triple crown and sets up a decider with France next week, but the way this team looks right now, France might want to start installing some speed bumps over in Bordeaux. Italy versus Scotland was next, and as I said last week, I had high hopes Scotland would find a way to bounce back, which is precisely what they did. It was an exciting match. The teams locked at 7 at the break, and looking at the stats later, there just wasn't much separating these teams all day. The Italians missed 65 tackles more than their visitors, which may have accounted for Scotland getting the upper hand as the game wore on. Emma Orr had another standout performance, and she and Chloe Raleigh, who both scored with just 6 minutes, within 6 minutes of one another, put the game out of reach. Beatrice Rigoni got the home team within a converted try with just 7 minutes to go. They had a legitimate shot for sure, but it was not to be. The Scots coming away with an incredibly important win, 10-17 in Parma. Wales versus France finished out the weekend, and the Welsh nightmare continued, getting shut out at home by a surprisingly consistent French team. France, they scored 19 in the first half and 21 in the second. The Welsh really just never got anything going. France scored 3 tries in each half, which with Joanna Grise, the only player to get more than one, including an insult to injury try right before the end of the game. The final score at Cardiff Arms Park was 0-40, a really tough result for Welsh fans. But, exactly what the doctor ordered for the fans of Les Bleus, for sure. France, they're only a point off of England on the table, setting up a nice first-place clash next week, but come on. Anyway, Wales, meanwhile, I don't even know what to say, except they do have a shot next week at the Principality. That'll be a huge advantage, so there's still good reason to be hopeful, I'd say. It's going to be a great weekend to finish off the tournament. From what I hear, the most successful to date, and no wonder. Switching gears to Super Rugby Pacific, where it was round 9, which is the final round where the teams had bye weeks. So, of course, it's going to be full on for the next 6 weeks after this. This week, we started off down in Suva, where the Fijian Drua were taking on unbeaten Hurricanes. It was the first night game in Fiji this year, and they told us that the Prime Minister had given all non-essential personnel the afternoon off to celebrate and prepare. How great is that? Anyway, as you'd expect, it was a stuffed stadium just at a full fever pitch long before kickoff, but their enthusiasm was dampened somewhat by a rampaging Hurricane side who went up 28-12 by halftime. TJ was doing his usual chit-chat, we'll call it, with the officials, who at one point told him to, quote, put a lid on it, unquote, which, I don't know, that was as funny as it was kindly put. The comms said, quote, at this stage, TJ's refereed more games than a lot of these officials, or tried to, at least, unquote, with maybe a quarter hour to go, yet more ill-disciplined, this time in the form of 2 yellow cards right on top of each other against the visitors. The 15,474 fans packed into the stands sensed an opportunity to get back in it. Sadly for them, the Indrua managed only 3 points while up 2 players, a sum erased by famous Dubliner Jordy Barrett soon after that. The Hurricanes would remain undefeated in an impressive win, 15-38. And how long will this streak continue? So, the Reds, they were hosting my sad and misfiring Highlanders, a team I heard referred to this week as an entry-level Kiwi side. Now, I tell you what, truth hurts. So they made a raft of changes for this one, hoping to mix things up and end a 3-game skid, while the aptly named Reds made a few changes more out of necessity, I guess you could say. This game was even worse than I feared. My Highlanders getting shut out for the first time since 2019 against the Crusaders. It was the biggest win for the Reds over their guests in 27 years. Final score 31-0, and I will now go through every highlight for the visitors. Okay, moving on, and for new listeners, each week we tend to put out polls on Twitter asking for your votes for the game of the week in each of these competitions. I didn't bother doing that this week because we're sort of starting fresh on a new platform, but if you're not already, go ahead, follow @ofscrum online and you know, check out those polls when they come out each week. We often get some pretty funny results. Either way, in Super Rugby, for me at least, the clear game of the week had to have been Blues taking on the Brumbies, a matchup between the number 2 and number 3 teams, both locked at 6-1 and 27 points for the year, so it had the potential for an instant classic. For me, the stat that looked like it might make the difference was points differential, where the Brumbies sat at plus 66, but the Blues had double that at 132, a plus 132, and of course, they were at home at Eden Park, so also had the potential to be a bit of a cakewalk, to be fair. So it had been raining all day, so it was always going to be slippery, but that had nothing to do with Funaki getting yellow carded early on, the trend continuing. Despite being down a player, however, it was the home team getting the first try, converted by the unfortunately named Harry Plummer. Brumbies couldn't take advantage of their, well, advantage, and found themselves down 24-0 at the break, and it was hard to feel optimistic for the Aussies. So Luke Reimer finally got the visitors on the board in the final quarter of play, but it was never close. The Brumbies should be thinking about a long look in the mirror. A match between the 2 and 3 showed how much distance there really is in that gap as the Blues laid the hammer down 46-7. So finally, for round 9, the Western Force, they were back in Perth for the stumbling Crusaders, who have to be hoping that they wake up in a cold sweat any moment now after this nightmare of a season. Tonight, however, they stayed dead asleep, dropping yet another game. And to be fair, the Force looked really good back in Perth. The hosts nabbed 7 turnovers and slotted 5 penalties, while also besting their guests 4-3, and it was a solid win, 37-15. So a look at the table. It's a bit of a shocker right now. Everyone has played 8, and only the Crusaders have 1 win. If the playoffs started today, it would be 2 Kiwi sides, 2 Aussie sides on the outside looking in, though both teams representing the island nations are just 1 point ahead of the weirdo Waratahs, I'll call them, while the Hurricanes, of course, sit imperiously atop the ladder, unbeaten. Worth noting, the Blues do have a better points differential, but the picture in Super Rugby is becoming clear by the day. It's astonishing to note the Chiefs are only in 5th place, led by teams including the Rebels. Who would have seen that coming? Switching over to the URC, there were just 5 rounds remaining coming into this weekend with a lot still to be decided. Regular listeners will know I'm a bit of a stat geek, so before things kicked off, I just spent a little time staring at the table as it stood. I was surprised to see that the Bulls were the league's highest scoring club with 19 more points scored than table-topping Leinster, but of course they'd also given up 79 more points as well. I was also surprised to see that 11th place Lions had outscored second place Glasgow, but again, they were conceding just over 5 more points per contest. Two other quick things that jumped out for me. Benetton, sitting in 6th place, having lost just once at home all season, had a negative points differential, the only top 8 team to claim that dubious honor. And then finally, Scarlets had scored the fewest points this season and had the worst points differential, yet still had 2 teams below them on the table. What twists and turns were in store for us this weekend? Well, on Friday, Ulster were back in Belfast to take on Cardiff. It was good to see Faletau back in action on a lovely day in Belfast, which isn't a phrase I hear too often. Crushingly, he had to come off after just a half hour clutching his arm. I felt so frustrated for him. He just can't buy a bit of luck these days. Ulster, they again struggled to get out of their own way, the crowd becoming increasingly annoyed by the litany of handling errors. It wasn't a great game, but it was close, and the ending was pretty wacky. Right after it looked like a Kabango had gotten through for a hat trick to ice it, the play got called back for an intentional knock-on, sending Rhys Carey to the bin and sending John Cooney to the tee, where he easily slotted it to steal a victory. The crowd finally back at full voice. Cardiff players gobsmacked. 19-17 was the shock ending at the Kingspan. Glasgow hosted the Sharks at Scotstoun, and with the squad that came up from Durban, it looked like it might be a rollover for the Warriors. However, there was just, there was something missing from their game. Like, they'd look really, really good, then suddenly the final piece would just kind of fall out and they'd be back at square one. It felt like Glasgow should have scored 3 tries just in the opening 12 minutes, and when they finally did get one, you kind of looked at the scoreboard and thought, that's it? Anyway, I know it's bad luck to say his name, so I'll just say the Scottish player got the start, and he looked pretty good while the Fagerson boys were doing a lovely job of getting the visitors all riled up. Ollie Kebble came in off the bench for his 100th cap, but had to leave a few minutes later with an injury, and I realized that was twice in a row. I felt excited to see a player come on, mentioned it here in my notes, only to see them headed off the pitch in pain, so I might have to switch to highlighting players that I don't like. Anyway, Glasgow, they did enough to get the win in the end, but I have to say, they were lucky that the Sharks sent a JV side this time. Otherwise, I really think they could have been in trouble. If I was a Glasgow supporter, I'd be a bit worried by what I saw this weekend, but it was, of course, still a win. On Saturday, Lions were home for Leinster. It was a fun day for the home fans because the Lions decimated a heavily rotated Leinster side to the tune of 44-12. 32 points was by far the widest margin of defeat this season, so it made me wonder, when was the last time they even had a heavy loss at all? But then I actually went back and looked and realized I had totally forgotten round 18 last season when they sort of walked the plank at Loftus to lose by 55, so maybe this is becoming a late season tradition, because I'm totally down with that. Anyway, Benetton, they were hosting the Dragons. Stop me if you've heard this song before, but Dragons lost. Wasn't the worst beatdown in the world, but it was comprehensive. A very late try, adding some respectability to the 36-19 final scoreline. Great crowd for this one, though, by the way. Benetton are looking very dangerous, particularly in Treviso. The Bulls, they were back at Loftus, as they will be for the remainder of the season, to face reigning champions Munster in our obvious game of the week. The comms announced it was a beautiful autumn day in Pretoria, and while I do understand how seasons work, that still always freaks me out a bit. The home team, they were at full strength and remained unbeaten at home, while the reigning champions were looking to gather momentum the way they did around this time last year, sending out their best for an exciting clash of styles. Munster were on a 7-game winning streak against South African teams. Wow. Dating all the way back to a loss against the Lions, they said, in March of 2022, which is a stat that makes no sense to me, but frankly, I didn't have the time to double-check it. So, helter-skelter was how the comms described the opening moments, but, I mean, how can you not mention it? The fireman, R.G. Snyman, he was sublime. I mean, when he's out there, it happens as often as not, but he just becomes this thing that can play better than everyone else. It's like he's playing against elementary school kids when he's...
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Just at the top of his game like this, Did you see the carries? Did you see the soft offloads? Oh, my word, what a player. So it was a close one. The home team ahead by a nose heading into the right towards halftime. I swear, right at the end of the half, it was Snyman again twisting magically through to get a go-ahead score. I'm so grateful that poor old Leinster will get him next year. He'll be a boon for their struggling program. Anyway, side note, did anyone else think that the Bulls' attack just looked absolutely nowhere? It looked like they were just kind of guessing, like they had never met. For me, didn't bode well. Anyway, at one point, the comms used the phrase, amongst the Munster men, which cracked me up because I feel positive it wasn't intentional. Connor Murray, he slammed the lid shut with a try that left him limping a bit, but sure enough, it was Munster pulling it out in the end, a potentially huge win as we get into the latter stages of the season. It was 22-27 for the Bulls' first home loss of the year. I mean, this was a statement win for Munster, right? Stormers were home for Ospreys, and as they were showing us the starting lineups, I don't think I've ever recognized fewer players as they showed them to us. Like, I had to do a double take to make sure I wasn't in the match day 23 for one of these teams. Anyway, Ospreys, they sported a 10-point lead at halftime. Great stat they showed in the second half. Stormers had racked up 43 scrum penalties coming into this game, which was a full 14 more than any other team, but they were still behind as we entered the final quarter. Ospreys had won just once away from home since January of 2023, but today was their day, putting the Stormers to the sword 14-27, a fantastic result for the traveling Welsh side. Connacht, they were back in Galway for Zebre. Nice bounce back for my guys, who got a thorough win against their struggling guests, 54-16, really nice. And then to close out the round, Edinburgh, they faced the Scarlets at the Hive. I don't know, maybe I was just in a mood or something, but for me, it was just a thoroughly uninspiring performance all around. Like, the comms said that only Benetton had won here since April of last year. Can that be right? I swear, I can't figure out this Edinburgh team this season. Like, every time I think I have my figure on it, they do something weird. And this felt like another one of those nights. Scarlets somehow led at halftime, 7-15, but the second half seemed a lot more normal. Edinburgh going ahead and earning some wiggle room along the way, while the visitors managed only one penalty as we wound down into the final 10 minutes. The mall crabs into touch, and that will be that, announced the comms as we arrived at the destination we all thought was coming despite the early warning signs. It was 43-18 in the Scottish capital. Okay, over in the top 14, it was round, what, like 329 or something? So I'm a bit sad because Oyonnax, after working so hard to secure promotion this year, they look like they're ready to fall right back down after what I thought was a pretty promising start to the year. On the other hand, there are still about 846 more rounds to go, so anything can happen. So, getting things started Saturday morning where I am, it was Cast versus La Rochelle. It was a beautiful, bright, breezy day, and a perfect day for rugby. I was a bit worried about how La Rochelle would bounce back from their hammering at the hands of Leinster last weekend in Europe. This season, they just don't seem to be the same team that we've known for the last few years. So it was a tight one, but Cast kicking was letting them down a bit. They were down a point at the intermission. This one turned into a massive seesaw. I lost count of how many times the lead changed hands, but there was still only a point between them with under 5 minutes to go. What an opener for this weekend's top 14. The home team would indeed cling to that fine margin the rest of the way, and it's starting to look like the mighty have indeed fallen, La Rochelle losing again, 25-24. As always, we had our middle block of four games, for which I only have scores to report, as sadly I missed them. So Oyonnax versus Racing went just how you would have expected, the home team getting trounced 13-43. Perpignan, they were dominant at home versus Lyon, winning big 51-20. Stade Francais, they just snuck past Bayonne 28-24. Definitely sorry to have missed that one. And then Pau beat struggling Montpellier 31-23. And then it was Le Jeu de la Semaine. We'll call it a twofer. Toulon versus Toulouse. And this obviously had to be the game of the week, for me at least. This one was at Stade Velodrome. It looked packed to the gills as the Pilu Pilu echoed through the cavernous venue. It's impossible not to be fired up for a match like this one. Though, to be fair, Toulouse sent a squad that seemed to signal, you know what? We're good. Go ahead with this one. On the other side, I spied Lester Fainga Anuku starting at 13 for Toulon. I feel like I haven't seen him for a while, but it might be my imagination. Anyway, Luca Tauzin, who, by the way, looks like someone made an oversized mannequin based on Roman Entomac. He got the first score of the night, a ripper in the corner. And even after just 10 minutes, I had doubts about the Toulon defense. However, it was the aforementioned All Blacks winger getting a try in response. And in much the same fashion, it looked like that right front triangle of each in-goal area was in for a beating on the night. So a red card might have tipped the table, but it was just before halftime, and it kind of felt like they'd be happy to do some quick adjustments in the lockers. But it was just a feeling, and it was a tantalizing 10-11. It was an unbelievable ending in this one. These teams are promising big things for the postseason, I'd wager. It was an incredible 20-19, the final tally. What a game. All of that was on Saturday, while Sunday brought us my very disappointed Bordeaux Bègles, who were at home in front of a very disappointed fan base to host Clermont, who looked like the awkward single person at the table while the married couple are squabbling. So my guys left no doubt, though, in this one. It was 41-7. I think Clermont are on the train to pure mediocrity. And over in the Gallagher Premiership, we just had four rounds to go this season, including this weekend. So for some clubs, the window to any postseason hopes was rapidly closing. As of Friday, your top four teams were Northampton on top, followed by Bath, Saracens, and my Harlequins. But Bristol and Exeter were only two table points out. Leicester and Sale both still had a shot mathematically. The Bears had won three in a row, so logically had the best shot to try to break in. But I don't know. Frankly, I just had a hard time seeing that happen. So on Saturday, things got started with Saracens hosting Challenge Cup, challenging Gloucester. We were back to business as usual. Saracens close to doubling up their guests, 46-24. Northampton continued to impress with a big win over the sagging Leicester Tigers, 40-17. Exeter fell victim to Bath at home, losing 14-26 at Sandy Park. And then Sale versus Harlequins. That was a fun one. The Sharks were up 22-10 at the halftime, but they almost let it slip away. My Quins making a furious comeback, but ultimately falling short. It was a good game for Sale, 37-31. And to close out the weekend in the Premiership with some absolute nonsense, Bristol Bears lit up Ashton Gate against the hapless Newcastle Falcons. I mean, it was almost as bad as England versus Ireland in the Six Nations. It was a shocking 85-14 by the end. Varimi Vakatawa, he nabbed a brace within 3 minutes, just before full time. That was a microcosm of the season for the Falcons. If you had asked me even 3 or 4 weeks ago if Newcastle would get a win this year, I would have said, yes, eventually, like, they have to. There's no way they end on a goose egg. But now, I just don't know. Here at home in the MLR, it was the Mixtape Festival at Fort Quincy for my beloved Free Jacks, who were taking on the Seawolves from Seattle, a clash of the league's top two teams. This one, it was a really tough one for us at home. I mean, I imagine it would be, but it was just disappointing to see us so unable to build anything in our attack. I honestly don't know what wasn't working, but it was clear things were a bit off. So in case you don't know, the yearly contest between these two teams represents what we call the Coffee Cup, which is actually a pretty gorgeous trophy. It really honestly kind of hurt to see them taking it back to Seattle after beating us 21-29, a game in which they were in control pretty much the whole way. So our late substitutions, they really made a difference for us energy-wise. We all kind of wondered in the crowd, like, where that urgency had been throughout the first three quarters of the match, but we were too far behind to capitalize. Seattle looked pretty comfortable in the victory. Very late, it was a double whammy of bad news. So Holden Younger, a player I particularly admire and about whom I have never said anything less than, you know, stellar things, he had an opportunity to score a try but just didn't seem to have the pace or the power. Bit of a wake-up for those of us in the stands, but even more worrisome, Vion Conradi, he went down during the exact same play, clutching at his hamstring. He did the thing where they angrily rip off their head wrapping, and you instantly knew he was done for the day, and maybe much more. I'm in desperate fear of hearing what comes out of that. Jason Patras, though, of course, he had a great game. Mitch Jacobson was a menace on defense, as always, but we just lacked the coherence and the consistency to ever get a real foothold. Seattle, coming in top of the league, very much solidified that position, getting a rare win at Fort Quincy. Lots of traveling fans on hand for this one, too. I hope we treated them with respect. Theirs is a great club. They have a storied history in this still young competition. Elsewhere, NOLA took on Miami. I was shocked to see the Sharks get themselves a rousing win for this one, smacking around the underprepared gold on the road as well, 27-42. I imagine I could have won a lot of money by tipping that one. DC, they were home for the Thundercats. Houston got right back into the batter's box, taking down the team that I can't help but resent more every time they lose. 17-38 for that one. The Pups from the Second City welcomed the team from Los Angeles to the doghouse and really rubbed their noses in it, 54-31. And then to close out the round, San Diego, they were at the Snapdragon for the rugby team of Latter-day Saints. I felt sure the Legion were taking this one. In fact, as I'm saying this out loud, I'm realizing how catastrophic my picks might have been this week in the pool organized by one of my favorite people and my very first supporter as well, John. John, give me a do-over, will you? It was close, but the Warriors would come away winners on the road, 32-33 in a squeaker. Well, my friends, by the music, you'll know it's time for this week's Diamond in the Ruck Award, and this week the award goes to Ellie Kildon. Ms. Kildon, your hat trick this weekend put your total at a mind-boggling 9 for the Six Nations this year, and you have been the engine that makes your red roses go this year. Your vision, your work rate, your lead-by-example style have inspired your team to lofty heights again this year, and frankly, it's just been so much fun to watch. Ellie Kildon, congratulations to you, for you are this week's Diamond in the Ruck. Well done. Okay, that brings us to our updates and previews. The 2024 Women's Six Nations wraps up all on Saturday with Wales versus Italy, Ireland versus Scotland, and of course, fittingly, France hosting England. And then, yes, it is Anzac round in Super Rugby Pacific. They always do that so well. So, of course, back to a full slate in that competition, starting with Crusaders versus Rebels, the Weird Waratahs versus the Chiefs, the Andrua versus Moana Pacifica, the Brumbies versus the Hurricanes, Highlanders take on the Force, a game I would have deemed winnable before the season started. And then finally, the classic color clash, Reds versus Blues. Back in the URC, we've got Scarlets taking on the Sharks, Ulster versus Benetton, Zebre versus Glasgow. The Bulls will take on the Ospreys, Cardiff versus Edinburgh. And I imagine the two big ones this week have to be the Irish teams visiting South Africa, where we'll have Lions hosting Munster. And then an obvious candidate for your game of the week, Stormers versus Leinster. To close out round 15, the Dragons are back home to face my Connacht in the Premiership. Bath, they host Saracens. Ooh, that could be a really good one. Followed by Leicester versus Bristol, Harlequins versus Northampton. Ooh, another good one. Newcastle versus Sale, and Gloucester versus Exeter in the top 14. We'll start with an absolute cracker. It's going to be Toulouse versus Racing, followed by lowly Oyonnax versus Cast, Montpellier versus Perpignan, Bayonne versus Bordeaux-Bègle, Lyon versus Pau, and Clermont versus Stade Français. And then on Sunday, close out the round with a nice one, La Rochelle home for Toulon. Then back home here in the MLR, we've got Utah versus DC, stupidly named Anthem versus NOLA, Miami versus Dallas, Houston versus San Diego. Ooh, that's a sweet one. And then to finish things off for the weekend, the Bellends of Los Angeles welcome my beloved Free Jacks, who will certainly be on the hunt for some revenge after a disappointing week just now. Well, my friends, that does it for another week, and I'm so pleased you've all come along for the ride. Whether you're a brand new listener or one of the lovely people who have been on board since the beginning, we're 12 episodes away from our 3-year anniversary, so we're already putting together plans for how to make that a very special milestone. So, to all of you across the globe, cheers, talk to you soon, and be well.
It gives me great pleasure to be here today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.